An amended state budget calls for less drastic cuts than previously proposed to community jails, including the one in Haines. And two Tlingit masks, apparently from the Chilkat Valley, featured on a recent episode of Antiques Roadshow, are drawing questions from Southeast Alaskans. It's the KHNS Local News. I'm Emily Files. Those stories and more up next. Last week, we reported on how a proposed cut to state community jail funding would dramatically affect the Haines Police and Dispatch Services. Now, the state has added back most of the funding it planned to cut for community jails. The governor's amended budget, released today, restores $7 million out of the $10.4 million jails fund. At a legislative hearing on Monday, Corrections Commissioner Ronald Taylor said police across the state's 15 community jail towns told him loud and clear that zeroing out the funding wasn't a good idea.
The impact that we are learning and have learned from the various communities is pretty significant. We're now understanding that this is covering more than just community jails, that this is paying for community safety in a lot of these smaller communities.
That means things like police and dispatchers, too. The amended budget would still mean a $3.4 million cut for the jails program. Taylor says they'll work with the State Department of Public Safety, which covers things like prisoner transportation, on other ways to help offset the cut. For more information on the community jails program, you can visit khns.org, go to local news, and we have the story from last week posted there. A recent episode of the popular PBS show Antiques Roadshow caught the attention of some Southeast residents when a couple of 200-year-old Tlingit masks from Haines appeared on screen. It sparked the interest of regional natives and historians and raised questions about how the items left the area. Margaret Friedenauer has the story.
Fans of Antiques Roadshow wait for those moments when an item on the program is valued at tens or hundreds of thousands of dollars. The TV cameras catch the owner's stunned reaction when they hear their family heirloom is worth more than they imagined. And that's what happened recently during an episode of the show that was filmed in Bismarck, North Dakota. Here's appraiser Tim Trotta giving the news to an unidentified guest.
The mask, perhaps also in a retail basis, would sell in the neighborhood of $175,000. We never
no.
see...
Oh my gosh.
This is really, really remarkable material.
Oh. Wow.
Oh. These are among the most rare objects in North America.
But for many Alaska viewers, the value wasn't the shocker. It was the two items being appraised. They were wooden carved masks in the Tlingit style, clearly old, and according to the owner, originally from Haines. PBS does not identify guests on the show. Calls to the public broadcaster were not returned, so we weren't able to find the man's name. But he did give one clue to his identity when he explained to the appraiser where the masks came from.
They date back, I believe, into the 1890s, where my great-grandfather was a missionary to what is now called Haines, Alaska.
Trotta, the appraiser, described the masks as a wolf and face mask. He said there is a carving of a raven in the wolf's ear, and abalone was used for the wolf's eye. He said the face mask may depict an ancestor. He pointed out the faint pigments still visible. He estimated they were from the 1700s. But local natives and art experts say Trotta got a few details wrong. Those aren't raven figures in the wolf's ear, they're eagles. The masks are likely from Klukwan.
And, of course, when I look at them, I see that they are Tlingit Atu, or, you know, they are sacred clan objects.
That's Rosita Worrell, director of Sea Alaska Heritage Institute in Juneau.
And this belongs to the Kagwantan of Haines. You've got a wolf, and you've got that eagle in the ear. And to me, I said, this is, and it's from Haines, so it's got to belong to the Kagwantan there.
Worrell does agree the pieces are likely shamanic or tied to spiritual practices. Helen Alton, who is the director of the Sheldon Museum in Haines, watched the online video of the show and said if they are that old, they would have to have been kept inside, perhaps in a covered grave. But she says they also appear worn and used.
What my thought was is that these were used in cultural context. That's the kind of wear that I've seen on stuff that's been used in a cultural context over a long period of time.
That brings up another point. How did the masks make their way into private hands and to North Dakota? Using the clue from the guest about his great-grandfather having been a missionary here, the museum did a little research.
From our research and our records, if his great-grandfather was here as a missionary in the 1890s for a decade, the only person it could have been is Pastor William Walter Warren and his wife Viola Bigford, and they were here from 1891 to 1900.
It's difficult to say if the pieces were given as gifts or were collected. Alton says there are instances of pieces of spiritual value being gifted to missionaries if someone converted to Christianity.
The other thing that has happened with Christianization, I mean, the missionaries were there to Christianize. And what happens is that with conversion, people will give gifts like this of their old beliefs. Sometimes it's part of the process of conversion is giving up the old. And so many missionaries acquired things as gifts.
Worrell says if that's the case, the masks illustrate the ironic and difficult history of missionaries in the Chilkat Valley.
What is I find interesting is the contradictions. The great-grandfather was a missionary and a teacher, and at that time they were teaching Tlingit people that our spiritual beliefs and practices were wrong, but at the same time he's appropriating Tlingit objects. And I like to quote Joe Hotch from Klukwan, who says, "They collected our sins."
During an interview with PBS after the appraisal, the owner said he was shocked at the value, but didn't plan on selling the items. He said they were important to his family. Worrell says Sea Alaska will try to contact the man if they can find out his identity. Since the items are now privately owned, she says they can't be repatriated. That avenue is only available when items are held by federally funded institutions. But Worrell still thinks the items should be returned.
In this case, you know, if we could identify the individual and get his address, we definitely will write to him and suggest that he might want to return it to the Tlingit Kagwantan from Haines.
Alton says the Sheldon Museum is also interested in reaching out to the owner. She says the museum will work with the Chilkat Kwan Heritage Center in Klukwan to suggest the masks be donated back to the community or perhaps loaned so they could at least be displayed here. It's also possible Sea Alaska could work with other organizations to purchase the masks if they ever come up for auction. But with the recent appraisal of $250,000, that would be difficult. Reporting in Haines, I'm Margaret Friednauer.
A citizens panel continues wrestling with the future of Southeast Alaska's National Forest. The 15-member Tongass Advisory Committee resumed meeting this week in Juneau. It could come up with recommendations for speeding the transition from old growth to second growth logging at this meeting, but it has a longer mandate and members object to being rushed. They'll hear information about the age, quality, and numbers of younger trees that could be cut. Members will also hear more testimony from members of the public concerned about the future of the forest. Here's some of what was said at the previous meeting, held January 20th to 23rd in Juneau.
I'm Jim Muskoviak. I've lived in Southeast Alaska for more than 40 years in Gustavus. I was on the city council for 4 years. I was mayor for a year. I live in a house that's made of Tongass wood, largely. The city's interest in the TAC process is driven by the conviction that our economy and lifestyles at Gustavus are closely related to the status of our region's forests. Tourism, fisheries, small-scale timber milling, subsistence resources, and natural beauty are at the base of who we are and wish to remain. Regarding timber, the prevailing view of our community has been that our values are best actuated by localized, small-scale timber harvest in a general context of forest protection.
My name is Paul Slimkamp. I've been involved in the Tongass since about 73. I've been a forester professionally for decades.
One of the problems that we have with the young growth log is that it has very limited usage as far as types of products that can be made from it. And you are competing with outside interests, and the transportation costs associated with producing that in Southeast Alaska is very high.
I'm Shelley Wright. I'm the executive director for Southeast Conference. There are a lot of people living in the Tongass, people that don't know about what you're doing here in this room. And you need to remember that they're out there and you need to stand up for them.
The Tongass Advisory Committee is made up of logging, environmental, tribal, business, and government representatives. The meeting runs through Thursday at the Extended Stay America Hotel near Juneau's airport. For KHNS News, I'm Emily Files. Thanks for joining us this evening. You can listen to and read local news stories on our website at khns.org.